Good evening and welcome to the regular board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. It's our January 17th meeting. The board is in open session now, and the first item of business is the superintendent's evaluation instrument. Dr. Prater.
This is a draft, and I think it's really important that you have an opportunity to examine it and weigh in on it, and I want to tell you kind of where it came from. So if we started with the contract language timelines in my contract, the first one has to be initiated by the superintendent. So I have to acknowledge to the board president in writing that it's time for my evaluation by March of each school year. And then the second component is that the superintendent shall complete a written self-evaluation no later than April of each year, and along with state of the district presentation document. And hopefully you'll see that I've found a way to hopefully embed that self-evaluation into this actual document so that you, as the board, have that in front of you when you complete the evaluation of me. And the board will endeavor to complete the evaluation by May 15th of each year. I think that's one big endeavor. I think that time of year is really busy, but it's worth having as a target. And then the final piece is that during each annual evaluation, the board shall determine whether that evaluation is positive or not. And it shall be in the affirmation must be in writing in the evaluation document signed by both parties. So if I could have you go to the next page, which is Area 1. Now, I want to let you know that last summer, the board identified two committee members from the board to work with me on this tool, and that's President Unger and Ellen Sheffer. And they worked with me to provide feedback and develop the construct for this. And I want you to know that part of where this came from, I got on Google and I explored a variety of states, including our own, and I looked at a whole multitude of models that are out there. And this lends itself to our desire to go paperless. So this, what you're seeing here, will also be transitioned or moved into Zoomerang, which is a survey instrument online. So each board member would actually see this online and can respond to it online. Those data sets are anonymous or not. It's up to you. And those get compiled into a database for which the board representative who's going to compile the data can pull all the feedback from each of the areas so that when the board meets in closed session to review my final evaluation, they can examine each of all the feedback comments and all the summary ratings and weigh in on them in a final analysis. So I'd like to go through each of the areas with you and the way it's structured. So Area 1, leadership and district culture, and it starts off with an analysis of a mission statement of that area. This area stresses the superintendent's performance in leadership through empowering others, visioning, helping shape school culture, and understanding multicultural and ethnic differences. That's an emerging theme in our district. And then it provides performance exemplars, and you can look through those. So you can imagine examining me through the lens of these criteria. Now it says underneath those exemplars, superintendent's evidence of Area 1. This is my self-evaluation. Okay? And so what I will do is complete each of these area analyses, and then you would have that in front of you while completing the survey. So you could see how I see myself, you can see the exemplars, and then come to your own analysis of where I am in relation to that. Then there's a summary rating. There's got to be some quantifier here besides just narrative. And there are four domains: exceeded expectation, met some of the expectation, and did not meet expectation. So it's a four kind of component. And then the board comment area, you have the option to put in commentary or not. Okay? The second area is communications and community relations. This area emphasizes the skills necessary to establish effective two-way communications, not only with students, staff, and parents, but the community as a whole, including beneficial relationships with the media. It also stresses responding to community feedback and building community support for the district. Again, performance exemplars, I will respond to you how I think I did in that area, and then the same structure there. Area 3, Area 5, instructional leadership. This area emphasizes the knowledge and skills required to ensure the most effective teaching techniques are in place and that all instructional resources are used to maximize student achievement. This standard also centers on applying research and best practices with respect to all learners. So this ties in with the prior other areas. But specifically, how are we tying our resources and our data to instructional leadership in our district? Okay. Area 6, policy and governance. This area reflects the ability of superintendent to work with the board to formulate internal and external district policy, defining mutual expectations of performance with the board, and demonstrating good school governance to staff, students, and the community at large. And then the performance exemplars. Area 7, and this is the final area, is personnel management, which is a significant activity in our district. This area reflects sound personnel practices, develops a development of positive staff morale, fair and ethical treatment of all employees, ability to delegate appropriately, and to establish collaborative bargaining relationships. So quite apropos. And I think when you look at this structure, barring, you know, I imagine there's areas of feedback, I selected these 7 standards, certainly not randomly, but I took the existing board evaluation identifiers, and then I took what other districts throughout the country had selected, and I was able to infuse those, I think, was able to get feedback from Chris and Ellen, and now I bring it to you for you to weigh in on it. And the reason I think it's another piece that's important is it is a draft and it is a work in progress, and I'd be more than happy to treat this as a pilot structure as long as you feel it gives you the opportunity to weigh in on me accurately and fairly. And the way I look at it is identifies those areas that I think are critical to the superintendency. It provides performance exemplars. It backs it up with my own data, which you then could reflect on and triangulate with. And then it allows you to rate me quantitatively as well as make comments. So these are the things that I like about it. Also, it's online, so it's paperless until the final product. I think it's efficient. I think it's effective, possibly as a model. And what I've learned by researching is that districts throughout the country are struggling with this very thing. And I don't think there's any wrong answer. I certainly don't think there's any right answer. I just think there's what works for us and what works for you as a board. I think it's really important that the superintendent be held to the same sort of standard as everyone else in the organization. And since we're working on a collaborative model for teachers and administrators, I think it's important that we do this justice as well. So I'd like you to have an opportunity to weigh in on this.
Questions or comments from board members? Catherine.
I think it's fabulous. It's I was trying to think of all the criteria that we use for the initiatives, but I could come up with 3. It seems like it's timely and relevant and measurable, and you'll have to help me with the rest of those criteria. But it's really fantastic. I would ask one kind of form question: whether see how you have bullet points for all of these various exemplars. I'm imagining trying to process this information and then compare it to when you're doing your self, you're providing the evidence of your self-evaluation. I think it would be helpful if they were lettered, and then we could easily go back and forth between letter A up and down like that.
That's good feedback.
That's really all I had to say. I think it's fabulous.
I have one minor question, and in the personnel management area, it asks, are you an active listener? And rather than sitting in on all of your personnel discussions, I think that that's difficult for me, or would be difficult for me, to know whether you're an active listener. However, I think it'd be a great bullet underneath policy and governance and your relationship with the board. So I don't... Possible suggestion.
So moving that piece to policy and governance. That's good feedback.
Other comments?
Okay, so no more comments from board members. So I guess, Dr. Prater, what... Of course.
So the exemplars are not a finite list.
Not at all.
Okay.
These are just examples to guide you as a evaluator in what might you look for.
And as we go through this process, one year after the next, we will add.
Correct.
Okay.
It's
great.
Dynamic.
Excellent. Just kind of an FYI, it's great we're doing this right now because I'm actually on a statewide committee to look at the evaluation of the executive director of the California School Boards Association. And so I shared with them that we're doing this and that I thought it was a really valuable product and that we'd be willing to share some of it. And they suggested they might contact you, just an FYI, in case you get a call from them. The one thing I always get a little concerned about, and I'm not sure how we can handle it, is when we look at the summary ratings, 4 through 1, 1 through 4, however we want to talk about it, it's sort of like having a rubric without descriptions in it, and that's always the thing that worries me, is my met expectations might be someone else's exceeds expectations, and of course that's a discussion that the board will have. I wonder if there is any way that we as a board can come to agreement on that, and I don't know how to do it, but ultimately when we get to that point, it would be nice to have some other, like I say, exemplars, like we would when we're doing a writing rubric or something like that. Walter?
If Dr. Prater wanted to respond.
Yeah, you know, imagine being a teacher. Imagine being a principal evaluating a teacher and not having common assumptions or a common picture of what exemplary looks like. And so I'm a big believer in rubrics. I think defining or putting definition to exceptional or what you think meeting expectation looks like is something that we can continue to refine and develop annually. And I think as we move along in this, I envision that rubric becomes refined as we as an organization, as a group, improve our practice. And I think evaluation is critical, quite important to improving professional outcomes, and it improves relationships. It improves everything about us if we do it well. It does not need to be the hammer over the head. It can be constructive, and it should be taken that way. And rubrics lead themselves to clarity, and I like that idea a whole lot.
Right, and my hope for this is what we've done in the past, which will allow us to have, this will guide the kinds of discussions that we need to continue to have as a board with you as a superintendent. And I think part of those discussions, of course, will be framed by what we hear tonight. But having that and having all of our expectations clear, I think is going to be really good for all of us.
And ultimately, I would like to say that I think it's also important, you know, using reasonable outcomes on this or reasonable language, I think it's also important to communicate the outcomes of the board's view of me. Communicating that to the organization and to the public is also another piece that I welcome. I just think it lends itself to improvement and the idea that we're trying to improve what we do for those that we work for, which are the students. And so I just think as we move along this process, I think it's important that the public also understand what you're looking at in me and trying to develop with me. And I think that's an important piece that many superintendents and boards don't come to agreement on, but I think it's an important piece in today's society.
Chris, I was just going to add to your comment that at times when in the past, when there's been disparity in kind of the scoring or rating, I think it's exactly that. It was a lack of consensus on what the expectations were. So this is a very good approach to helping that.
So, Eric, it seems like our next steps with the board's approval, I guess the board's consensus is that you go forward and we memorialize this draft into an instrument that we can use, that we can, I guess, have some further discussions on if necessary, but allow you to go, really, I think, to go ahead, present the evidence that you're talking about in your self-evaluation, and then also, I think this in some ways will help guide what you say in your state of this the
Absolutely.
District speech as well. So seeing that the board is in approval, we'll go forward.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
My evaluation, and I think this would be an opportunity to look at some examples that are out there that boards are working on. And again, this is just an example or a set of examples. In Massachusetts, there's a charter school, and I'm going to provide you, I believe, four examples to just look at and weigh in on briefly. Massachusetts has a charter school that, again, I was Googling and looking at examples. This one is fairly simple, and it is basically a way for the board in this particular school district to give, you know, individually weigh in on their level of performance, where they see the district going. Everything from common understandings of roles and responsibilities to attendance policy and are they receiving regular reports? In other words, is the district working? Now, this is a very simple one. If you look to the right, you see that there's a grading criteria, self-grading criteria, very good to poor. This, in and of itself, isn't all that inspiring. But if you look on the back, it gives you a way. And everything I give you, I want you to kind of look through the view of an electronic paperless process that I would help design. And then on the back, it gives each individual board member an opportunity to weigh in on certain points. Okay? So this is one simple sort of model that could be aggregated and weighed in on and give each individual board member some opportunities to express them their view of the board. The next one is from North Dakota School Boards Association. Google's an amazing thing. And this one is a little more complex. This one was actually done as a result of a 5-year study involving trustees from more than 20 colleges, schools, and nonprofit organizations in the country. And they kind of laid it out very uniquely. I just thought it was a worthy document to look at, although quite robust. There's dimensions in this one, and there are six dimensions that are sort of scored and compiled, everything from contextual to educational, interpersonal, analytical, strategic, political, and at the very end of this document, there's an overall grade, if you will, percentage, and comments and goals. This one is, like I said, super robust. It would require some real thinking about aligning these dimensions to what we work with in our district. It's just something I thought deserved a little attention. And by the way, this is just my way of sharing some ideas with you to weigh in on. I have to tell you, this next one, Oregon School Board Association, I really, really liked. And what I like about it is it aligns kind of with the one that you just approved for me, for mine. And if you look at it, and this was happenstance, really. It was not intentional by any stretch. But the Oregon Board Standards for Governance, I thought, provided the greatest level of clarity, yet it was simple to use. So they laid out why evaluation and self-evaluation by the board is important. Laid out reasons why. So, okay, so we laid that, put that out there. And then part one, performance standards. So it sort of laid out part one and part two. Part one has to do with evaluating the district really on how they're doing. So standard one, think of area one, area two, area three, if we were to do alignment with this, is leadership, mission, vision, and goals. The Board of Education annually reviews the district's vision and mission statements and annually adopts board and district goals which support the district vision and mission. So you can see it being refined each year. Then there are indicators. In my evaluation, I'm calling them performance exemplars. And then it lays out a performance of this standard, a little bit of a different scale, but same model, and an ability for each board member to weigh in those areas. I could do this on Zoomerang, where each board member could weigh in on their own view of the board, and then we could compile it and do it that way. Standard two, policy and governance. Standard three, community relations. Standard four, cultural responsiveness and educational equity. I really like that one. Standard five, accountability and performance monitoring, which we know is really important. And I'm certain that you got a flavor of that at the mid-year summary report. Board, and then you could establish goals for me for the following year or for the district for the following year. And that would be reflected in part two. And part two, it would lay out the goals. In this case, in this year, the goals that you set forward, the key goals for the board from last summer's retreat, are success for all, innovative and collaborative practices. The third key goal was community partnerships and engaging parents. And key goal four was financial stewardship. So those things would line up beautifully in a model like this. And then you would weigh in at the end of next year, how did we do? Based on what? Based on what evidence? And so that's the Oregon model that, by the way, I have to say, all of these were PDFs except for the Oregon model where they gave the viewer the option for PDF or Word, which allows me to manipulate it freely, which is really kind of a – what I love about education is that we should be sharing our ideas and our models. This is not proprietary. We should be willing or able to share and also take as a matter of making things better for our organization. The last one, Sierra Sands Unified School District here in California. This one is off of the CSBA sort of model. And even though it's a little hard to read, and I don't really like the structure of this, I think it worked for this particular board. And they completed this board self-evaluation, and they were able to sort of provide, for example, to operate effectively, the board must have a unity of purpose, and they laid out areas, eight particular areas for which they surveyed the board. The board answered them and then provided a summary analysis. So this would work as well. I would want to clean it up structurally, but to make it easier to read. But this theme at the end of this also has goals and how they did on the goals. So you can kind of view that as one way. But one of the ahas I had after doing this little brief project was that the whole country is struggling with this. The whole country, school districts across the nation are struggling with the model. How do you do this? And it could be a very powerful tool if done correctly. I think it needs to be simple. I think the tools have to be efficient for you to use, and you have to be willing to look at it and examine it. Otherwise, I don't think it's worth investing in this process unless you really think it's going to glean some good things. So basically, that's what I – this, like I said, is your call. I just thought I'd start by sharing some potential models with you.
Well, what I like about this is that we have some – basis to work from, and that we're not going to try to reinvent this thing, the wheel, because we've seen other boards doing this and struggling with it. So I think it's very helpful for me personally to look at this and then decide what I think works and doesn't work. So I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Well, I guess the first thing the board needs to decide is, do we have an interest in doing a self-evaluation? And I must say that my belief is we should do a self-evaluation for a couple of reasons. First, I think since we want to maintain a transparent relationship with our constituents, having them know whether we've achieved the things that we need to achieve as a board to help the school district move forward. I think that's important, and I think that's really important to be able to share with our constituents the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I think that's the first thing. I think what you mentioned, Eric, is our goals really, in many ways, should help drive your goals. We have SMART goals, which we all agreed to, and that's fine. But I think we as a board should be looking at, are we supporting you and the school district in ways that will move those forward. So those are two important things. And then I think also just continuing a conversation amongst board members about our relationships as board members, our ability to function as a board and to be a high-functioning board, which I think we are, by the way.
Yeah, I would agree.
And continuing on that. So I guess, like I said, the first thing we need to find out is, does the
board... Done with... developing the superintendent's evaluation tool and have a subcommittee work on that.
Mark and then Catherine?
I'm very excited about this. I've already sort of gravitated towards Oregon, but I think this is going to be valuable, and I fully support it.
I was going to volunteer to be on the committee to come up with a template like the two of you came up with for Dr. Prater.
Well, let me see if maybe we could do a thumbs up. Marilyn, how do you feel about this? Are you okay with moving forward on this?
Has my light been on this whole time? Is
no.
That why you kept looking at me?
No, I kept looking at it because I wasn't sure if you haven't, you haven't weighed in yet, so I was giving you an opportunity.
I'm totally in favor of self-evaluation, and I would like more time to look through these. This is just a, you know, first blush. For me, when it gets too complicated and in-depth, then I lose my ability to really be able to relate to it. So a clear and concise document with brevity at its heart would be something that I would be interested in, and I'm totally in favor of having a committee work on it. I think that's great.
Dr. Prater, would you like to, and then Jim, would you like to maybe share your one of the things that you gleaned out of the book you're reading and the notion of brevity and clarity of goals?
Yeah, I was glued to the biography of Steve Jobs over the winter break, and there were quite a few insights, aha moments from the book for me. One of them I was sharing with Chris and Mark, I believe, was the idea, and Apple has become a master at that, is if it's not simple, if you can't make simplicity out of complexity, it's not going to work. It's not going to be effective. It's not going to help you. And so our goal, my team's work, which is heighten the level of stress, has been let's try to simplify these things that we do and try to make them understandable with strong rationales. And then we can more easily prioritize what we do. And so, yes, that's my aha from the book, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think if it's simple but informative, there's the trick. And it's not necessarily easy going from the work you do is super complex. Making it simple takes work and takes some creativity and ingenuity. So that's the task here that I'm willing to work with you guys on to help.
Well, I just wanted to concur that I think this is a valuable idea. We don't have the instrument yet, and I guess I'm one that wants to look down the line and think, okay, well, we get a committee, and then we would you like that committee to come up with a timeline, or should we think of a timeline now? Out there is a board retreat, which is usually in the summer. And I'm just thinking ahead, where do we want to be before we get there?
That's a great question, and I don't have the answer to that right now. But that's clearly something that we have to decide. And I don't know if we as a board want to decide that tonight. If we do, then I'm sorry, Merle, I can't hear you.
The question is the question deciding when we want to do self-evaluation?
Well, I guess the first thing is we have consensus that we want to do a self-evaluation. Then the next thing that was recommended was a subcommittee to help develop the self-evaluation to create clarity out of some of the models that you have presented to us. And then the third thing concurrently is what's our time frame? How do we want this to work? So I'm thinking, well, I'd like to hear other people weigh in. I'm guessing that we should probably go ahead and establish a subcommittee. And then the subcommittee can come up with a suggested timeline. And then after that, I think the subcommittee would go ahead and work on the instrument itself and poll the board members and see what recommendations we might have. Does that make sense?
And it would be very helpful. It would be really helpful if we could coordinate these things with my evaluation timeline, because you, believe it or not, your evaluation informs my evaluation or my goals for the following year.
With having your having the results of your evaluation without immediately determining what your following year's goals, your 2012-2013 goals would be. Because I think that's really a question is, do we as a board want to have Eric's goals immediately come out of his evaluation, or do we want to do the evaluation as we're doing our self-evaluation and then combine the two to come up with your goals for next year? I don't know. How about if we do Marilyn and then Jim and
thank you.
From there?
I thought that the goals, I mean, maybe with a little fine-tuning, were pretty much established for Dr. Prater last year when we laid out the five-year plan. That was my understanding of it, the strategic plan. And if I recall, Dr. Prater said that he was willing to succeed or fail based on the percentages
That's right.
That we were able to achieve in progress toward the strategic plan. And so I think that is kind of the, for me anyway, I'd been feeling that was how we were going to be evaluating. Did you make the progress that you thought? And if not, why not? Because there is room for, you know, we tried our best but didn't quite hit it here, but we're moving forward. And so I think that for me, our self-evaluation should occur at the summer retreat when we've had an opportunity to get the results of this year's efforts toward the strategic plan, and then we can take a whole lot of credit for it, for our success.
Have a press conference.
Over coffee and croissants.
That's a wonderful thing. My turn. Oh, Jim, go ahead.
Well, mine was just clarification. And so, Eric, are you looking at the same timeline, the April and the May 15th, and so that we have an instrument in place by April and then some of board evaluation by May 15th? Or because it sounds like Maryland's wants to look at it later, and that was my initial thinking, yeah. Timeline-wise, is that we would have an instrument ready for a board retreat in the summer, but it sounds like you would like that pushed forward. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't have a driving opinion on this one because I think it's going to find our own timing. You know, when you look at the criteria in the evaluation of you know, what is it that board members do? What are those overarching responsibilities? As with mine, you'll see that a huge priority that you placed on me, which I wholeheartedly accepted, and I still do, is the idea of student achievement within those initiatives. But keep in mind, that's only one portion of what I do. And so there are other things that you're going to want to weigh in on. Now, in fairness to what Marilyn said, the hard part, unfortunately, until 2014 when the Common Core come out, where they're going to work on a different timing system, the STAR data doesn't come out until the end of August. So we'll likely not know how we hit some of those targets in the SMART goals until September in the state of the state. So we're always sort of behind the curveball. Now, that's why we're trying to build in local assessments and transition those in, and then the STAR data becomes confirmation of our success in those common assessments. So my feeling of timing, just Jim, to answer your question, the purpose of the self-evaluation, I think, of the board is to make sure that the board is functioning well. Part of that, are we on the trajectory where students are achieving? Are we on the trajectory where students are safe? And we have a culture that's caring. And what evidence do we know exists? And that will be reflected in my evaluation through myself, sort of a kinder word, my own self-reporting on the data I collect from within departments and sites and so forth. So you'll be really well informed, I think, by the data, the self-evaluation, which comes out in April. So from there, you'll be more able to complete my evaluation in May, if we can make that happen. The board self-evaluation, in my mind, is different than that. I think the board self-evaluation is a more reflective one that has a little bit of concreteness to it. And
what I was getting at, Chris, when you were saying developing the goals right away, that's always been difficult. I mean, we sit there sometimes and not with Eric, but in the past, where we are really hashing out the evaluation as we're going along. So I do think it's valuable to step back and go, okay, especially since part of it's going to be quantitative, part of it's going to be qualitative, and sort of consider, because some of it's going to be, in the old NASA term, mid-course corrections, because we know these are ambitious goals. So we need to look at a whole complex mix of things, and I think the goals are sort of mid-course corrections for Eric, you know, go home more, but make sure students achieve. And then the same thing for the board. Now, if we do a board evaluation and we're using an instrument that we can do online, then to some extent we could all synthesize the information and then show up at the retreat and deal with the issues. But I do think we need to have the component to inform what we're going to do at the retreat. And I'm excited about the the online access to everybody's kind of input and ahead of time.
Yeah, following on the coattails of what Walt said, I think I would prefer to have the data, the information compiled before we go to the retreat, so that and disseminated among ourselves, so that we are discussing the results of the self-evaluation at the retreat instead of doing it there. I would much rather have completed it and have that be the meat and potatoes of what we're doing at the retreat.
So what I'm getting from the board, Eric, and hopefully, yeah. I think you probably heard this, is that we'll develop them along two separate tracks, that I think it's the board's wish that the whatever the results of and the outcomes of the evaluation instrument that we ultimately decide to use, I like what Ellen said personally, and I hope that this is what the board members want, is that the data will be compiled prior to the board's retreat, and that will guide the discussions that we have. We'll have time to reflect on it, and that will help guide the discussions we have in our summer retreat. Is that what everybody's feeling? Okay, I think you have consensus.
Process question. How do we go? Let's see. If we wanted to review these sample board self-evaluation tools and then be able to share input comments about it, what vehicle do we use to do that? Provide it to you?
Yeah, if I were to have a two or three board members that be willing to work with me on this, it shouldn't be too long in the making, and then we could send out some options online, and you could weigh in on them, and we could come up with a protocol to get your feedback.
Okay, I think that's a good.
And I would see that the information that's gathered as summarized would then be presented again in an open session meeting.
Oh yeah.
That this process of our board self-evaluation will be done open session. Marilyn?
Thanks. I just want to be clear. I understand what we're doing in terms of our evaluation, right. But have we given Dr. Prater direction about the timing of his evaluation? I think we left that.
Yes.
No, so I'll have my self-evaluation to you by April. And once that's completed, that will initiate a survey to you on Zoomerang, and then you complete it. I know it sounds funny, but it's a real simple system, and you just complete it and do the comments, and then by Endeavor to by May 15th, it should be. And I'll backward map it so that everybody knows kind of how quickly they have to move on that. So. And then last year there was, I want to say, a board member assigned to compose the final.
Right.
And so I would work with that person along with Kim, so they have access to the Zoomerang core file. And then that file is easy to manipulate and get all the comments in. So it's a smooth, efficient process. Should be a smooth, efficient process. Simple.
Okay, simple. So I just wanted to be clear and sure that you were clear on the the timing of the two different evaluations and events.
Okay. I am clear.
So what I'm looking at, Eric, is I'm looking at your master planning calendar here.
Yes.
And what I don't see is a placeholder on here for your state of the district report, and that maybe I see under April we have strategic
plan. Not an agenda item.
What I was thinking, and I don't know if I'm off base on this, what I was thinking was that there would be a public presentation of the state of the district, and then what you're talking about, Kim, has been the state of the district as presented by the superintendent was the self-evaluation.
So if you look at the master plan calendar at the very end in June.
Right, we have superintendent's final eval.
Okay, I believe.
Here it is. I'm sorry.
There it is.
Got it. Okay.
Okay, so it's at the end of the month in June, which will be past.
Right, I understand.
The timeline.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No worries.
So I guess the next thing that we need to do, the board needs to, we need to find out who would like to, I'm sorry, Jim.
No, that's that's why my light is on.
Okay.
Just to remind you that's, I'm interested in that.
Okay, so do we have people interested in serving on the subcommittee? And then if there are more than three, we'll have to figure out a way to make it fair and pick people. So who's interested? Ellen's interested? Catherine's interested? Jim's interested?
I'll withhold my interest, even though I did have interest.
Curb your enthusiasm.
And wait for, I volunteered for something a couple of meetings ago. I'm still trying to figure out what it was. So I'll check with Kim later, and I'll withhold my.
Okay.
But please volunteer me for something. What was it?
She said you're going to do the dishes after dinner.
Gladly.
Yeah. So I think we have a subcommittee. We have Ellen and Catherine and Jim. Okay? Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the board will now go into closed session. I'm sorry, I should have gone to the public. Does anybody from the public wish to address the board on this item? Jim? Brian? Okay, thank you. With the district negotiating team and our employee organizations, the California School Employees Association, Confidential Employees, Management Educators Council, and Service Employees International Union. We also had a conference with our labor negotiator, that would be me and the board, for our unrepresented employees, management, confidential, assistant superintendents, and superintendent. No action was taken in closed session. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay. Mrs. Sheffer had to leave after the closed session. So let's begin then. As I said, we had no action on closed session items. Let's move then to approval of the minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes? And we'll do it three different ways. We have the meeting of December 7th, December 15th, and January 10th. So would someone like to make a motion? This actually says December 7th. It should be December 6th, I believe. So would somebody like to go ahead and make a motion on that?
I move to accept the minutes of December 6th as amended. I believe there are some amendments as well.
Okay. Mark?
Okay. I'd like to second the motion.
Okay.
I have a brief discussion.
We have a motion to second, and let's bring it to out for discussion.
Okay. I just want to apologize. I misspoke myself when we were talking about the number of ROP students that are served. I indicated that there were 166. It was actually 966. And I just want the board to be aware of how valuable and how many students are being served by ROP.
So we have a motion and a second. Anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board.
930, Kim.
930.
Do I hear none?
All in favor of the minutes for December 6th? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Moving on to the meeting, the special board meeting of December 15th. Would someone like to make a motion on that one, please?
I move approval of December 15th board minutes.
Second. We have a motion by Mr. Quesenberry and a second by Mr. Millar for the December 15th minutes of that meeting. Any discussion? Discussion? Seeing none. Mrs. Roger.
I don't have any discussion, but I don't believe my microphone is.
Oh. The light is not coming on, but there is someone home.
There it is. Get it?
Yeah. Thank you.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no discussion, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Special board meeting of January 10th, 2011.
I'll move approval.
2012. Yes, and that would be as amended. Thank you, Mrs. Holmes.
And I believe I was absent.
Cal Poly Journalism lecturer, and I wanted to tell the board about an international education event that is coming to San Luis Obispo for the first time on March 1st. It's called Purple Cake Day, It's a celebration of children and world cultures, and it's meant to empower our kids to help others in need. It started last year in New Zealand by a friend of mine who lost her family, her husband, and two of their children in the Haiti earthquake, where she was a UN aid worker there. And to honor her husband's memory, she started a foundation to support his favorite cause, which was promoting education in the developing world. The Purple Cake Day was devised as the foundation's chief awareness and an action event. And I was so impressed at how it took hold in the community in New Zealand where I was living with my family last year that I decided to bring it home with me and found a local co-conspirator, Natasha Raja, who's a local pediatrician. We have 5 preschools involved so far. That's our demographic. Our children are very young. We have the Children's Museum that will be sponsoring some activities, and the YMCA after-school care. Local sponsors so far include Sierra Vista Regional Medical Center, Prada, Bravo Pediatrics, and the San Luis Obispo Daybreak Rotary Club. San Luis Obispo High School Interact Club is volunteering, and we'd love participation from some more schools in the county. We have a 43-page resource kit that's full of education ideas, activities for the classrooms from preschool to high school age. And this year's beneficiary country is Nepal. Last year it was Haiti. And we would love to distribute it to the schools and would love to know the best way to do that. Okay, great. Thank you.
Dr. Prater, do you have a comment on that?
Yes, Kim, thank you for coming. I appreciate that. Why don't I leave you with my card and my phone, and you can contact me, and we'll get this thing started.
Right, yeah? You.
Okay.
Is there anybody else that would like to address the board on any matter before the school district? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back then to our presentations and our student representative, Haley Ramos. Take it away, Haley.
Hello, hello. Some past events that occurred on campus. Before we had winter break, we had the winter band and choir concerts, and we'd like to thank everyone who attended, including the board members. It was my last winter concert as a high schooler, so it was heartwarming and sad at the same time. And then we went for winter break, which was really fun. And coming up this month, we have winter formal, which is themed as red carpet formal or Hollywood themed on January 28th, and it should be really fun. And then the leadership class at Morro Bay is preparing for their mini mock rock assembly, so we've been dancing and singing every day, and it's pretty tiring, but it's really fun, and that's happening on February 2nd. And we are beginning CASI tutoring during the month of February for all 10th graders who feel if they need any help for any of the topics, they can go and get help for that. And then the CASI is occurring on March 13th and 14th. And this weekend, Friday and Saturday, our school is hosting our annual CIT wrestling tournament. And also on Saturday morning, the committee for the grad night event is going to hold a pancake breakfast from 7:30 to 10:30 a.m. And all of the proceeds go to the grad night fund, and you're welcome to come. And second semester has been in full swing, including winter sports. And tonight, the Lady Pirates soccer team defeated Lompoc 3-1. So,
Haley, you mentioned the pancake breakfast, and where's that going to be?
It's going to be in the Morro Bay cafeteria from 7:30 to 10:30 a.m., and we're selling tickets Friday night at the tournament. And I believe it's $5 with a ticket and $6 at the door.
Great. Okay, well, thank you very much. And as always, you're welcome to stay, or we say good night to you, and because we know that you're a busy person and got lots to do as a senior.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
I didn't realize my light was still on, but since it is, hearing about the sports, I made a personal commitment that I would attend a slow high girls basketball game, but I don't have a schedule. Is there a way to get a schedule to me? Thank you, Dr. Prater.
Okay, great. Thanks, Haley. Okay, let's move on then to the second presentation. Dr. Prater, would you like to introduce that?
I would. You know, there's some
teams, and we appreciate the efforts of every person on our team, and many of them are here tonight. Just in case you have any questions, they might be able to answer. So in this second student achievement report, we are really ready to dig in a little deeper. You received the comprehensive packet I just referred to, but what this presentation does is it focuses on the collaborative continuous improvement process that you saw in the packet, and we're going to see that process through the framework of the work we're doing in mathematics. So the format of tonight's presentation kind of has three sections. And within, you'll be able to see we've got some natural breaks within those three sections. So to begin with, in the fall we talked about the power of using multiple measures, demographics, perception data, student learning, and district and school processes to inform our work. Tonight, what we want to show is that using multiple measures, this collection of different kinds of data is really only one part, this little piece of the pie here, of a bigger and more important process. And so we're going to lead you through that process right now by looking at math. By going over the collection of data in the fall, which was this. Then we analyzed that data. And then we drew up a plan. And then it is just very sensitive. There we go. And then we implemented that plan. And so Amy's going to lead us through the specifics of that.
I'm worried to use the clicker now.
You know what? This is probably better.
Okay. And that's a that?
You can do that.
Okay. Good evening. So beginning with our collection of data, you remember back in fall that large packet we gave you and the information that was shared way back then. We looked at, first of all, our California Standards Test, the CST, and we noticed a decline at the upper elementary grade level that continued on through high school in math performance. We also noted that our students struggled in Algebra 1. In fact, only 52% of our students had reached proficiency or advanced levels from last year of all those students who took algebra. This lack of success became even more striking for specific groups of students who took algebra after eighth grade. At the very same time, we were beginning to collect information about the California Common Core State Standards. We learned that there were not only going to be standards, but there were these eight practices of mathematical standards that went with it that we were very intrigued by and wanted to learn more about this. We also learned about the new assessment coming from the SBAC that would take place in 2015. And what we knew from the beginning is that this assessment would include both multiple choice and performance-based assessments. From here, we began to analyze that information. What we noted related to the CST results is that we had needs for intervention programs as well as professional development for our teachers. We wondered about those higher levels of math and the deeper conceptual skills required to be successful in these classes. And we really wanted to make sure that we had all the information we needed to know to evaluate our current program. We had a strong hunch that students were struggling in math as it became more abstract, and yet we also wondered about students' attitudes related to math, especially as they climbed up the grade levels. We knew that teachers' content knowledge and use of high-leverage instructional strategies was really important for student success in mathematics. We also thought about current methods used for student placement in math and how this affected achievement. As far as the Common Core, we began analyzing the standards and found a very strong national math curriculum that was comparable to our already rigorous state standards. We felt the timing of those new standards and our district Initiative 5, developing a world-class math program, was perfect. As states across the country are beginning to develop plans to implement the Common Core, we are seeing every day new opportunities for collaboration, not only between districts, but also now between states. We saw a lot of needs with this Common Core, that those 8 standards for mathematical practices would require us to raise the level of conceptual understanding and deeper problem skills required of our students. Another thing we noted, that the balance between developing conceptual understanding and procedural fluency was very apparent in the new standards. This would require some very serious. We developed district common assessments in mathematics related to algebraic thinking. The purpose of those assessments, and it's real clear that we have that together tonight, is it wasn't just to see how students are doing. Our purpose when we developed those common assessments was to really introduce our teachers and our staff to that Common Core standards. It was also to develop a district-wide understanding about what performance assessments really are. We also wanted to inform our district math plan, and we also wanted to look at identifying professional development needs for our teachers. We wanted to engage staff in a formative assessment process, and then again with the surveys that we gave to our students and our teachers, we wanted to collect some baseline perception data. So from here we began and we implemented our plan, this fall's plan, with the help of our consultant who is here with us tonight, Barbara Blonke. Thank you for being here. We began the process of aligning our draft math plan with the California Common Core. In professional development, we knew we had a lot of work to do to get started, and the first thing we thought we should do is develop our district math TOSAs. We've got our brand new 2 TOSAs, we've got this brand new Common Core coming in, and we wanted to develop their expertise in not only knowing and understanding the Common Core, but in understanding and being ahead of the game in understanding great math strategies, research-based instruction. So we spent a lot of time invested in them and getting their skills and knowledge base up. We also then facilitated an early fall training called the Academy of Inquiry-Based Learning Professional Development that was done in collaboration with Cal Poly. This was for our 6th through secondary teachers. And then we planned and developed a math solutions workshop for our elementary teachers. We went out to school sites and provided introductions on the Common Core. In the area of assessment, we developed those common assessments that included not only a performance task, but a multiple choice assessment, teacher survey, and student survey. In addition, in 6th grade, we piloted a mathematical reasoning inventory assessment for select 6th grade students. I'm about to turn it over to Jill and Barb, our math TOSAs, who are going to help us take a deeper look at what those performance assessments actually look like. I want to check in for questions first. Okay.
Hi, I'm Jill Larson, and I am the pre-K now, 6th math TOSA.
And I'm Barbara Salitis. I'm the secondary 712 math TOSA.
Right. And we focused a lot of the common assessments that we did, as Amy said, on performance tasks. And the reason that we did it on performance tasks is because that's going to come up in our assessment, and we felt that our district, both students and staff, didn't have a lot of familiarity with that. So the definition, as we were looking at it, of a performance task is an open-ended, real-world problem that is also sometimes called an authentic assessment, where students can demonstrate both their procedural understanding of the task as well as their math concepts. And in that, they must actively participate in the problem solving rather than just selecting an answer. So a lot of our assessments right now measure the content that they've remembered, and the performance tasks can simultaneously facilitate student learning and measures the demonstrated ability of the students. So for second grade, we did our performance-based assessments in kindergarten, first, second, fourth, sixth in elementary, and in secondary we did it in
Yeah, so secondary, we did a performance task for our middle school students, and it was by class, so it would have been Math Plus, pre-algebra, Algebra 1, Geometry, and Algebra 2. So we went through Algebra 2 in the secondary level.
Right, and so for secondary, this is the prompt, and I'm going to pass out some examples of authentic student work and talk through a few of those along with the rubric that we scored them on. Sure. And is there the clicker somewhere? Where's the
readout?
Oh, okay. In a minute, yeah. Thanks. So each grade level had a different task, and this is the grade 2 task that we'll come back to, but it was this idea of 15 fruits, and some being apples and some being bananas. How many of each could I have? And then how did you know that you found all of the different combinations? When we chose the performance tasks, we had an authentic, or we had a scoring day with the teachers. And rather than look, so you have to understand what the problem was, and you have to be accurate in that. And then this was created by Bill McCallum, this particular graphic. Then he's also listed the other mathematical practices, showing that 1 in 6 run through every one, but different math problems will focus particularly on some of those different math practices that you see. So for our primary ones, we focused only on number 1 and on number 6, and we gave separate scores because you can't combine them because they are two different standards that we were assessing. And there's the rubric that you were looking at, and so you can see that we graded it on 4 points, and we looked at, did that child understand the problem and persevere in solving it? And then later, was that child able to clearly communicate their understanding and give a precise, accurate answer? So as you, we've got a few pictures up of the common assessment process in various classrooms across the district with the student survey, as well as you can see the kindergarten one down below, which is patterning, and then different ways to make 10 was grade 1. The top cartoon was from the math survey. We didn't solicit that, but on the back, a student had written, "Run away, math is coming." And then you can see that some classes found different ways to help the students understand what the student survey was asking. And that was on a 5-point scale from strongly agree to strongly disagree. So I'll give you just a few moments to look through. I know you've already been looking through, and then I wanted to highlight a few of the assessments. They are adorable, huh?
Yeah, it's
great. Yeah, all about the different ways of doing it. So as engaging as they are, if you could turn to the front assessment, please. It's assessment A. There's an example up there. And on our rubric, that assessment represents a novice person as far as their understanding in this task. You can see that they have lots of fruits and a carrot, so they've got some context going there. And you can see that some work was erased underneath the carrot. There's a 10 and a 15, and it looks like maybe they had circled the apple and said the apple times 10, and then a banana times 5. But they didn't understand the task in its essence, and they weren't able to answer the question as well about finding all the combinations. If you look at the next task, which is sample B, This is more of an apprentice level on there, and you can see that they were able to represent the apples and bananas abstractly with an A and a B, and keep in mind these are second graders, and they understood the standard of putting things together, these combinations, but they've missed quite a few of the combinations, because you can see some of the teaching points are that they haven't really noticed a relationship amongst the solutions. They don't have a table. They are not showing the commutative property where they have one apple and 14 bananas, and then later they could have done 14 bananas and one apple. It's just kind of all over the place there. So it gives the teacher a lot of teaching points to move the students further along in their mathematical understanding. And I love the comment, too. It says, how do you know you found all the combinations? Well, you have to look really hard, and if you see and know you've got you've got all of them, you're right. And if you turn to C, we also assessed this at an apprentice level, but you can see that even within one level, there's lots of different teaching points and ways that you can move the child along. And that's one of the beauties of performance tasks, because it really helps you understand their understanding and guides you as a teacher. So this child is using symbols. We've got the addition sign and the equal sign, writing equations. There's a lot more precision that's happening in this example. They didn't miss any of the add-ins of the combination of 15, and it was more orderly and it was more organized, but they still didn't find all the combinations on this one. And then the answer was that I knew I had all the ways to make all of 15 because I play cribbage with my grandpa, and cribbage is a game all about 15. So there's that real world connection as well that child had. And then if you look at the last sample that I'm going to share tonight, sample D, you can see that this child has a clear assessing with performance tasks, and the reason that we're emphasizing it as well is because this is the way to really develop our critical thinkers and really see how deeply they understand the concept, and it's more engaging, as you guys could see as well, and it just leads to clearer steps for the teachers in their instructional strategies. I know, we love that student work.
Okay, so this is the performance task that we did for Algebra 1, and this did come from the Smarter Balance Consortium, so it was from their review materials. I did change the wording somewhat because they talked about taxis, and the performance task should be something that students are familiar with. And I wasn't that sure that San Luis students would be that familiar with taxis. So this problem is asking, a problem where Sam is organizing a trip to the airport, and there's 75 members in the band. So he's organizing a trip to the airport for the band members. He's trying to figure out the best pricing. So it shows that the small cars are $40, and they hold four people. And then the larger cars are $63, and they can hold up to seven people. And then it's broken into three separate questions. And a performance task should allow students to have an entry point so that even students that may be struggling in mathematics should find some success. So this is scaffolded, where the students can start with a problem that's a bit easier and then work up to a more difficult problem or question. Okay, and just like Jill, the math practices are a huge emphasis in the Common Core. And in secondary mathematics, an area that's also being included, and it's actually considered one of the conceptual categories, is modeling with mathematics. So the performance tasks that we looked at, we did look at it, same as the elementary performance tasks, where we were looking for math practice 1, which is making sense of the problem and persevering. And then math practice 6, where they're attending to precision. And then we also looked at modeling with mathematics, because that's going to be a huge emphasis in high school mathematics. And modeling in mathematics is taking a situation and then applying the mathematics appropriately. And so it's not, which we think of modeling as like building a model to represent a problem. This is actually taking a situation and then applying the mathematics to deal with the situation. And I actually thought of modeling when I was at San Luis
high school on Friday afternoon at 3:10, and I was trying to leave the parking lot. And that, to me, is a wonderful modeling problem for a group of maybe statistics students to go out and analyze the traffic flow and maybe come up with some solutions. It's pretty intense. So that's modeling with mathematics. And so the rubric that we use, we also went on a four-point scale. And so we have, if it's a level four, it's exceeding standards. And we looked at the three different areas. And then for three, it's going to meet standards. Two is approaching standards. And then for one, the student would be considered below standard based on those categories. Okay, so now if you would refer to A, which is on the top of, this is a sample of student work. So as you look through this, and my analysis of what the student was maybe thinking is that they used the six large cars and divided that into number of people and came up with 14. So this student is not demonstrating that they had made sense of the problem. They did obviously read the information in the frame, or I think they did, because they did use 75, and it does state 75 people up there. Their calculation, though, is incorrect, because it would be 12 and a half. And we did have on some of our students that correctly figured out the problem using the correct procedure. They identified that you should use 8 1/4 cars. So that's not making sense of the problem and applying it to the situation. And then this student did, on the second question, it said, how much will the total cost be? They did accurately calculate this using the incorrect information from the first question, but their calculation is correct. So that does attend to precision. And then the third question in this problem was where the students really had to think about the cost per person, so doing proportional reasoning and analyzing. In the large car, it ends up being $9 per person. The small car is $10 per person. So this student, it seems, did do an analysis, seeing that the bigger car would actually be more cost effective, they said, because it holds more people, but they never did an analysis of price per person. And they're going to leave five people behind. Because if they use 10 big cars, that's 70 people, so five people are left behind. So this, again, is looking back to see, does my answer make sense, attending to precision, and then also perseverance on the problem. All right, now this would be, this is a sample, but they never considered the fact that different combinations might actually minimize the cost. Then if you look at paper C, so part of using precision, attending to precision, is also being able to clearly communicate your reasoning. So this student did identify that you need 9 small cars, and they're showing their computational procedures on the side. And then they also said you can't leave one person out. So they recognize that you have that one additional person, so you need that additional small car. Then they went ahead and did the analysis of what the total cost would be. So again, showing procedural fluency. And then down below, this student did an analysis, and they went ahead and used proportional reasoning to determine what is the cost per person per car. So they then analyzed that that it's $9 per person for the large car, 10 for the small. And I did say, because most of the people over at our office are language arts people, that this would make them cringe with some of the language arts. But they did identify that you need 9 large cars, 3 small cars, because if you divide the cost, they recognize that it was less per person using the larger cars, and that you also wanted to make sure that you didn't leave anybody behind, so you needed those 3 additional small cars. And that actually was the correct answer. So that was going to minimize the cost. So modeling with mathematics, they're showing proportional reasoning. They're using ratio. Another approach that I took to this problem is I created a table so I could analyze the different combinations. So that would be showing modeling with mathematics. I think that was it, right? Okay. All right. Do you have any questions? And we originally talked about having you do these performance tasks, and then decided maybe not.
Do you get extra credits for assuming that Sam could be a male or a female?
Oh, and I love that you asked that, because I found, based on the answers, it was gender nonspecific, because some of the students said he and some said she. So I love that it was either way. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Darla Batistic, and I am the assessment TOSA for pre-K through 6th grade.
And I'm Erin Lunds. I'm the assessment TOSA for 7 through 12.
So what does our winter data collection tell us? So after we had students do these performance tasks, we were able to take a look at some of the information that we gained from this experience. Our secondary information won't be available until the end of March because some of our secondary students don't finish their first term until Slow High's end of their second trimester. So that data we will be sharing with you at a future board meeting. Tonight we'd like to share with you the elementary performance task and multiple choice data, as well as the perception data that we collected through our student and teacher surveys. So let's take a look first at our elementary performance task and multiple choice data. A random sample from each grade level was scored by a group of district elementary teachers participating in a professional development scoring day. And this graph that we're looking at here shows both results for all of the scored student samples, as well as results for each grade level task. These results reflect the student's ability to make sense of the problem and persevere in solving it, one of the math practices that Jill and Barb were pointing out earlier. The results across the grade level indicate that most students are not prepared for the rigor and complexity demanded by the type of performance tasks that will be expected by the California Common Core State Standards in Mathematics. Overall, less than 30% of the scored papers were marked practitioner or higher, indicating that the students successfully completed that task. And you can look across the grade levels and see that varies a little bit by grade level, but it's pretty consistent that we don't have a lot of students successful at this. We attribute the success in first grade to the task that was selected. That first grade task was very similar to tasks that we often see in our first grade classrooms. So students in that grade seemed a little more familiar with that type of task that was selected for them than the students in the other grade level. This next slide shows an interesting comparison. Our fourth and sixth grade students also participated in a CST-like multiple choice assessment on the same California Common Core state standard. And it's interesting to compare the results from these two assessments. The results from the multiple choice assessment compared with the results from the performance task for these grade levels indicate that our fourth and sixth grade students performed much better on the CST-like multiple choice items than they did on the performance task. And if you look at the graph, in fourth grade, we had 70% proficient on the multiple.
I am good at math. In elementary, students feel pretty confident saying, I'm good at math. In middle school, not as sure, but still on the positive side of agree. We also see a big difference in how middle schoolers answer the question number 12, learning new concepts and ideas in math is fun for me. However, we see that all of our students, number 7 there, they all want to do well in math. And then on the next slide, we've divided it by grade. So second grade has that red line there, and then it goes all the way to eighth grade. We could see the lines pretty clearly on number 6. Here we go. I can't read from here. They like doing math problems. Up at the top, that's second grade. The next line is third grade, followed by fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth, all in a line. And then also on this, I'd like to point out that numbers 10, 11, and 12, they also make these stair steps. 10 says, I like learning math. There are many ways to solve a math problem, is number 11. And number 12 is, learning new concepts and ideas in math is fun. So as we progress through the grade levels, math seems to be a little less fun. But again, number 7, we're strongly united that we all want to do well in math, grades 2 through 8. And then the next one we looked at for middle school, because here we start leveling students in math. So we have the red line, which is Math Plus. These are students that are below grade level in math. And then this blue line, the light blue line, which we can still kind of see here, is geometry. And these are students that are above grade level in math. And if we look, and then pre-algebra and algebra are on grade level. So geometry is quite different. Again, number two, I am good at math. Geometry, they're above grade level. They feel like they're good at math. Math plus, they're below grade level. They don't feel as confident that they're good at math. And again, here, we have 10, 11, and 12, and these are, I have fun doing math problems. I think there's many ways to solve a math problem, and learning new concepts in math is fun for me. Geometry students, students that are above grade level, think it's really fun. And everybody else is not as sure, but was happy to say that no matter what course students are in, below grade level, above grade level, or on grade level, they all still want to do really well in math.
The results from our teacher survey provided us with information that will help us develop our math plan. We asked teachers questions in different categories. The first category we asked them about was collaboration, and the San Luis Coastal teachers indicated that they had many opportunities to meet with others and discuss math concepts and prepare instructional materials. They indicated that occasionally they meet and discuss student progress based on data. However, close to 90% of our teachers said that they almost never have an opportunity to visit each other's classrooms and observe each other teaching. As far as instructional strategies go, many of our teachers indicated a need to learn a variety of research-based strategies for developing students' conceptual understanding of mathematics, of digging deeper, like that will be required by the Common Core. Assessment tools. The survey identified that teachers are using a variety of tools and methods to assess and grade their students. Because of the variety of tools currently in use, we are not in a position to accurately measure district-wide progress throughout the year. There's a need to develop a comprehensive assessment plan in mathematics, including tools such as a universal screener for math placement, formative assessments, and summative assessments in order to consistently measure student performance across our district. In differentiated instruction, teachers expressed a concern about how to address the wide variety of academic and behavioral needs in their classrooms. And finally, in technology, there was some evidence that teachers are using technology in our mathematics classroom. However, the accessibility of different technologies is not equitable across our district classrooms.
So you've heard the analysis of our most current student achievement data in mathematics. From here, we begin our plans for spring 2012. And we have lots of exciting things planned for math, I'm happy to tell you. First of all, we want to get that four-year plan finalized. We're going to be meeting later this month with our committee to start it and also to start developing some math leaders at each of our elementary sites. Our district TOSAs will be out at sites observing, coaching, and supporting math at the classroom level. They'll also continue to add resources to the shared drive and our blog. In the area of assessment, we plan to expand the mathematical reasoning inventory assessment. At the secondary level, the scoring of the common assessment performance tasks will also be facilitated. This as well can be considered a professional development day because that's in that scoring process, there's a lot of learning that happens about best strategies as well as Common Core. And then in the spring, we will implement our second phase of our district common assessment scoring. In addition, we also plan on piloting an intervention program in both upper elementary and secondary levels.
So Darla and Aaron and Amy just took us through our second rotation of looking at our data, analyzing it, coming up with a plan. And so what we have is we've gone through this cycle this year once all the way around and then three quarters of the way. What we'll be doing in spring is implementing our plans.
Tonight our focus has really been about student achievement with a hone in on mathematics and thinking about how using this collaborative continuous improvement process can help us in terms of how we might affect student achievement. In looking at the various influences we have on student achievement, we must begin with the district. With the courageous development of our 10 initiatives, the Board of Education, you have set the bar high for academic achievement for all students. As you reviewed the data packet over the weekend, we hope that you were able to see how each of our district departments contribute to student achievement and are part of this collaborative continuous improvement process. Our schools have aligned their single plans for student achievement with those 10 initiatives in mind and are tying not only their actions but their resources to meet those goals. Our departments and grade level teams are working at sites to affect student achievement with the use of data walls, data teams, and study of our current data. With the leadership of our site principals as well as our district TOSAs, teams of teachers are looking at different types of data, analyzing what that data tells us, and developing programs and interventions to affect student achievement. In the classroom, teachers have developed SMART goals and objectives for the specific advancement of students in their classes, again, tied to those 10 initiatives. While all of these factors support student achievement, if we are going to dramatically increase student performance, we must diligently focus our schools on the one critical factor that has the greatest impact on student achievement, classroom instruction. Using data to inform classroom instruction is a collaborative process that provides meaningful feedback to both the teacher and the student. We are committed to support the process at all levels.
So one of our key goals is to develop our data culture. And by creating this cycle and by creating our district common assessments, what we have tried to do is model for our schools how we can use data to inform our decisions. But we don't want to just provide that model. We also want to provide resources and services. For example, and we've drafted a menu of resources and services that our schools can use to let us know how we could help them. Resources might be helping them with data director reports or looking up research for them on best practices. Services could involve actually running reports for them, or it might be going to a site and helping them to facilitate the data team conversations that need to take place. It's important to know, though, that it's not about waiting for us as a district to model for the schools what we need to do. It's actually a fluid collaboration between the district and the schools, and ideas flow back and forth. And so we want to conclude this evening with a video for you. And what you'll see in the video is, I know Dr. Prater has shared with you the idea of radiating fire. Well, in this case, these are examples of how we're firing before we aim.
Bring my teaching to a higher level, and then in turn, bring the students' learning to a higher level. In my classroom, in order to help with assessment and differentiated instruction, one of our tools that we're able to use is our clickers, our student response pads. So if you're walking around the room, not be able to just see how as a whole the class is doing, but we'll be able to look at each individual student in real time to see exactly how they're doing on each question, so you can differentiate your instruction even more and immediately go over and help one student who's struggling.
Yeah, how can we see what students are learning in the classroom and the growth that they're making? So with the formative assessments and the benchmarks, it does two things. One, it allows us to see the progress they've made over 6 weeks, giving them a pre-assessment and then the post-assessment. The second part about that is it allows teachers and myself to see what areas of the subject matter and the content standards that I could potentially focus more on. You can obviously see by the pie charts, 76% of the students that I had were failing this test, and that's a total. I expect that. These kids probably haven't had this material presented to them before. After the 6 weeks of the marker period, you can see on this chart, that's totally flipped around. We've taken that 76% failure rate and flipped those around to at least 76 to 78% of these individuals getting a C or above. The one thing that teachers don't want to do is we already apply enough tests as there is finals, midterms, STAR tests, all those good stuff. I don't have to continue to list them. But what I found different about the benchmarks, what makes it useful, is the results that we get back are so instant and so useful. They're not like a STAR test. They're not like a final. Overall, it's probably the most efficient form of assessment that I've used.
Our grade level teams have set up a math wall this year, and so we have a wall that's for each grade level within the math subject area. And we've been meeting and looking at our student assessment using that wall to help anchor our discussions. And it has really helped us to, one, know the needs of our students within the across the grade level, but also to really focus in on the needs of individual students and make sure that we're meeting them. The teachers feel really positive about the work that we're doing collaboratively. I think what we've all found is we've done this work in our classrooms for many years as individual teachers, but the power of coming together and just kind of harnessing and tapping into our collective knowledge has really, we've seen it translate into our own professional learning, but also into positive results in our student learning.
That concludes our presentation. Any questions? No, it's good.
Thank you. That was a great presentation, and I was really able to understand what was being presented to me, so I appreciate you giving it to me in words I could understand. And I'm glad I didn't have to do the algebra problem. I probably could have done that one. But I did have a couple of questions. I wrote down 90% of teachers almost never have a chance to observe their colleagues. And I'm thinking, you know, we're trying to create collaboration time. We are creating it, and it's valuable, and teachers are using it very successfully. Is there some way to facilitate that observation? And maybe that's a question for Dr. Prater or Mr. Robinette. I don't know, but since it was commented on by teachers, I'm assuming that it's something that they think would be really beneficial to them.
And I think it would be. Just, you know, doing the breakthrough coaching where we're getting out into the classrooms, us administrators, I come back and I speak with the team and I tell them about everything I'm noticing and learning as I'm in those classrooms. And now our next step is to get our teachers on special assignment. But that would be a natural next step. But I think it's going to take a certain amount of support.
How can that be made to happen? I mean, with some release time or what? I don't know how that would work. It's just a thought for the future, I guess.
Actually, it's a very important piece. Teachers observing their colleagues, especially across subject areas, is just as important because it creates awareness. It creates actually a level of pride in the staff that I think is missing sometimes when they don't know what their colleagues are doing. And so for me, the part of our planning structure as we go through the spring in the budget development process, one of those very likely will be time and resources. And within the time and the resources, which would have a budgetary impact, the outcome or the expectation the accountability of that time and expenditure would be an expected outcome to say, yeah, we're trying to build professional communities that build upon each other. So therein lies the stair-step process that we're hoping. For me, this level of awareness is critical. Now we just need to systematize it so it's a natural part of what we do.
I understand that it's all, you know, that our resources are limited. It almost sounds like teachers are taking such great advantage of the collaboration time, yet they are working, actually doing their work in isolation. And it would be nice, I mean, it would be beneficial for students, for teachers to have the ability and the time to observe others doing what they do in their own individual way and then implementing. So I think we're on the same page.
We are.
And then I just had one other question, not to be negative, but this is what I wrote down. Accessibility of technology is not equitable across the sites. I don't know if that was one teacher's comment, several or more, and what would you attribute that to, and what does that mean?
Well, what we were finding, for example, with document cameras, 62% of our elementary staff say they use document cameras daily. But at secondary, we have a lot of teachers who don't even have document cameras. So it's not equitable between elementary and secondary.
And how did the inequity arise, do you think?
I think that some schools with certain resources plus the leadership at the school decides this is a priority, this is how we're going to pull our resources, we're going to put them there. Others find other things that are more of a priority, and that's the way they shift their resources. There aren't enough resources necessarily to do everything that they want to do.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, a question and some observations. First is, math is almost a logical one for all the benchmarks, but how many do you anticipate by grade level or by semester benchmarks? Is just every 6 weeks, or is there a magic number?
Well, we have kind of two levels going. We have district common assessments, and those we have two per course at this time, and we purposely made them shorter. Okay, we wanted a dipstick. We wanted to have more of the energy and time go to formative assessment at the sites. So they're kind of two levels. District common assessments that all students in the same grade level or in the same course take, and they can take them within one day, and it gives us good information. Formative assessments could be done by school, by department, and those would be more often.
And the other one was just an observation about the, I call them word problems, the performance, what do they call them here?
Performance.
The performance type problems. I think it's interesting to see this being done at second grade, and I'm sure at first grade, because, you know, I grew up where I can compute quite well. It seems to me that we weren't introduced to word problems, and they came at some point, who knows, third, fourth, fifth grade, and that was sort of the wall that a lot of kids hit. You know, learning to take what you knew about everything, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, properties, and then to apply it in a real situation. So I just want to make that comment. I'm really hoping that that's the part that's really getting built for the kids. Thank you.
I would just respond to that with, I think the data that we noticed way back in August when we looked at our STAR test made us have some hunches about why it was that about fifth grade or so, students who had been achieving well were no longer achieving well. And we think exactly what you're talking about is the first point of that.
by fifth grade, you can't fake it anymore with those harder, more difficult, deeper concepts. You may know the how-to, but if you don't have the understanding behind it, it becomes more difficult to perform well on those kinds of assessments, and we think that's part of why we see it.
You know, it's more than just the common assessments. It's now that we have that information, what are we going to do to help students who are struggling learning English and yet having to understand what Jim called, and I grew up with Matt, word problems. What are we doing about that one?
And maybe this isn't the answer to your question, and Amy can help me out here, but what I wanted to add also is that we translated some of those common assessments. There are different approaches. Luckily, all of our teachers now either have their CTEL or their EL authorization, or they're well on their way. But just like we're going to help our social studies teachers and our science teachers incorporate literacy, the Common Core, we didn't talk about that tonight, we've mentioned it before, they are now going to have some responsibility in literacy. We need to get into those classrooms and make sure that our math teachers and all of our subject teachers are using the strategies for English learners that we've been talking about in their instruction.
The only thing I would add to that is, as we put this kind of professional development in place for our teachers, we're really looking at developing their strategies and helping students see different ways to solve problems. A lot of that will involve manipulatives as compared to worksheets and thinking through problems. I think it's going to be to the advantage of our English learners. And then when we get to those performance assessments, like Rita said, we had done some translating for this first round, but our goal is for students to have that deeper understanding, whether they say or write their answers in English or in another language, is neither here nor there when we're developing their deeper understanding in mathematics.
Well, mine, again, is just another observation. You know, we talk about the Yale students, but we also have a lot of students that come in my opinion, with a language deficit. In other words, they don't have the command of words that other students have. They don't have the vocabulary. And I think this does affect when you get into the math area, when you're looking at word problems and understanding what it is that they're asking you to do. So it's just an observation.
No.
Well, seeing no other questions, I really want to, on behalf of the board, I'd really like to thank you and everybody that TOSAs, everybody that was involved in the amount of work that you guys did. Appreciate the Amy, you're working this weekend to pull this together and send it out to us. I guess it was 2 days ago. With the corrections, it was just I'm glad we didn't go through this whole thing. There was a wealth of information. We would have been here all night. But I think one of the purposes of this was actually a couple of purposes of this was, first of all, to inform us, the board, and the public about what it is that we're doing and what our needs are. And then secondly, as we build our budget, areas that we'll need to focus on and what I'm assuming will be brought forward when that budget development process is brought forward to the board, which I expect is going to be within the next month or two. Is that correct? Okay. There's been a request for a short break. We're going to take a 5-minute break recess right now, and then we'll reconvene at about 27 after. Thank you very much. Let's move on to superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater.
All right, yeah. That's okay, Walter. We'll let it go this time. Probably saved me from an embarrassment anyway. Thank you, Mr. Unger and board. I have two items, actually, in this update. One is the status of the state budget, and the other one is budget development process. So we'll hit the status of the state budget first. And there hasn't been a whole lot of action from the legislature. The governor has established his baseline expectations for the budget for the state for 2012. And it's not very friendly to education. He has put out a call for the passage of an initiative that he's designed that, should it fail, would result in the equivalent of 3 weeks of school being cut in terms of salaries and costs across the board. And at least anybody think that's just the 3 weeks. That's a huge hunk of students' time to learn very critical stuff that we talked about today. Self, the thing that would generate the revenues for education not to be cut 3 weeks worth of a school, comes 5 months into the school year. It's already well into December, this time of the year even, if you will, before we would know the results of the initiative process that would be, if it does pass, expected to generate enough revenues not to cut 3 weeks of our school year. The one aspect of the initiative that has caused a lot of concern at all levels is that it's not just his initiative. There's many different competing initiatives resulting from this conversation. And we're starting to see something of a sorting out of that process. A number of different groups are starting to think about pulling their initiative because the population, the voters, when they vote, become very confused about different languages is saying essentially the same thing and tend to vote no on them all. Rather than picking out the best one, they just say, all right, I give up. They're all no. And that does not bode well for the initiative that the governor's put out. We'll continue to monitor. There's the issue of cutting, first of all, establishing a pre-kindergarten transitional kindergarten program. And every district in the state of California felt it was mandated and have made steps to implement, including us. And now he is saying, well, I'm going to pull that requirement and you no longer have to adhere to it. But at the same time, those students that were in the average daily attendance calculation and under the pre-K, transitional K, model would still be in the ADA, the average daily attendance, are no longer in the average daily attendance. So districts would be taking a huge hit in terms of a declining enrollment, if you will, perpetrated mostly by legislation and law, not by students moving out of their district, but simply the legislature determining that they're no longer able to earn money for the district. That's going to be a severe blow in a time of declining revenues anyway. To lose an average daily attendance component is really big. Moving on to the budget development process that Chris alluded to earlier, we're starting to roll out two different aspects of our budget development process. One is a timeline. We want to establish a monthly kind of an update with the board, letting you know where we're at, and that sometime in April we would be presenting big ideas, giving you time to give us feedback, come around to May. All of this is predicated on one of the other components, which is a process. How's this process going to roll out so that the superintendent will get a well-considered group of recommendations to bring to you, and he'll be able to sort out the best ones and move them forward. So what I'm going to develop and deliver to the groups that are going to assist us in this is a single-page data sheet, if you will, on the different types of expenditures that we make. And I'm going to try and simplify so that what we come up with is a single page for different groups like personnel. Now we have personnel that's involved as TOSAs. We have personnel that's involved in EL. We have personnel that's involved in different aspects. So I'll break all of those down. We'll also bring you some pages on technology. Technology is a large dollar item that we're going to have to decide how important is it for us to move forward with. Different types of equipment, departmental budgets, and finally the revenue pieces and how we can look at our, what I call our enhanced revenues that we currently enjoy, mandate costs, mall money, different kinds of things. How can we make them better? And we'll have text, and we'll have numbers, and we'll be able to look at these things in an analytical way and determine the benefit that they would give to the district as a whole. Make no mistake, our budget for next year will be a budget of cuts when compared to this year's budget. This year's budget was an enhanced budget for the purpose of establishing a baseline momentum of all of the things that we've talked about. And it has been very successful, so successful, in fact, it's going to be very difficult to decide that we ought not to do this next year. That's going to be our biggest problem. So we're going to be looking at a budget that has cuts coming, and then remaining will be those items which have the most importance to student achievement that we can afford with our resources to continue to deliver.
So that's stabilized, though, at this point. In other words, we're not projecting to have more kindergartners and new students come in than we have graduating seniors. But we do have preschool and transitional kindergarten, so it could affect that a little bit. But we seem to be projecting about a 7,200 student population again next year. We are experiencing some trends in individual school growth and individual school shrinking that we need to be monitoring. Baywood, Bishop's Peak, Del Mar, Hawthorne, C.L. Smith, and San Luis Obispo High School will likely experience growth, and those have been growing schools anyway. Los Ranchos, Monarch Grove, Los Osos Middle School, and Morro Bay High School will likely decline in numbers. And so most of these shifts are attributable to the boundaries that exist that affect neighborhood school enrollment. I'm not suggesting looking at those boundaries, because we know how difficult that is. We suspect that as our socioeconomically disadvantaged numbers grow, so do our schools with higher levels of poverty, and attributable to either lower income housing in those surrounding neighborhoods or more and more families moving in with other families or relatives in those areas. And our coastal communities of Morro Bay and Los Osos, though, continue to see relative declines in student numbers compared to the San Luis Obispo schools. Some of our discrepancies, though, may be attributable to open enrollment, which is families choosing to send their children to non-neighborhood schools. This doesn't have a huge effect in a single year, but over time can actually change the composition of a school. If you know, 10 families this year choose to open enroll their student from elementary school A to elementary school B, and if that trend continued over a 5 to 7 year period, we're adding and subtracting 2 or 3 classrooms, moving staff from one school to another. So this is something we want to monitor, and we are going to attempt to set better controls over the choosing of open enroll schools so as to kind of control these patterns and conserve resources. And that's not to suggest that we stop school of choice or keep people from making those kinds of choices or discouraging the implementation of school choice, but that we don't get ourselves, especially in tough budget times, in the position of adding teachers, reassigning portable classrooms, or compromising school safety or program offerings because of it. Obviously, we have 2 schools that are totally open enrolled schools. Both Teach Elementary and Pacheco Elementary are schools with no boundaries, so we have to take into consideration the effects of those schools also. But we do anticipate the need to delay notification of kindergarten open enrollment until such a time that we can determine that a school can actually hold its neighborhood kids, because that's where we do have a great deal of control in kindergarten enrollment. And we are also considering the movement of some of our special educational regional programs from some campuses that are experiencing excessive growth. But we'll keep the board apprised. And if you have any questions, I'm certainly happy to answer.
That's actually good news for Los Ranchos, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, Los Ranchos has been growing every year for a while, and that I think part of that has to do with a boundary shift we did, I want to say 8 years ago or so, between the Sinsheimer and Los Ranchos neighborhoods, and it seems like that's kind of stabilizing at this point. It's good.
It seems to me...
It seems to me that there was a state law that allowed people to enroll their children at a school near to where they worked. If we were to somehow limit open enrollment, would that impact those people? Or
well, it could certainly impact them, but we also have the right with the within the existing laws to limit enrollment at any school because of limitations, because of whatever limitations we need to set. I'm correct in that, right, Russell?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. So,
but more to the point, Jim, what you're referencing, I believe, is what they call the Allen Bill, and it allowed for students to transfer out of districts more than it allowed for them to be admitted into. So, the district of residence cannot block them to request a inter-district transfer, which is different than open enrollment. Okay, the inter-district transfer can be requested to accommodate their working conditions, but if we're impacted, we don't have to accept them from other districts for that particular reason. And then the open enrollment, if we are seeing that our own open enrollment policy for our in-district students is impacting the sizes of our schools, the classrooms, and stuff like that, we're going to have a hard time accepting inter-district transfers from Atascadero to CMR and other districts. So it is a problem for us, if not next year, certainly in the near future.
Well, I'm excited to say that we're bringing several agreements tonight with all of our representative groups. But there are some groups that are not represented through these contract negotiations. And so I just want to let the board know that some of those non-representatives.
We have, this is item number 3, proposed 2011-2013 agreement with California School Employees Association public hearing. And I'm going to open the public hearing now. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. Let's move on then to item number 4, Mr. Pinkerton.
And so again, this would be the proposed 2011-2013 agreement with our CSE or SEIU employees.
Okay, and this is a public hearing, so I'll open the public hearing. Is there anybody that wishes to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. We'll move on then to item number 5, which is a resolution agreement with Public Agency Retirement Services to administer the 2011-2012 Early Retirement Incentive Program. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. Resolution number 10-11-12. As part of the settlement agreement with confidential employees, CSCA, MEC, SEIU, SLCTA, and executive staff, the board approved an early retirement incentive program. It is necessary to contract with a third-party administrator to manage the plan. The board has provided information about this proposal during the course of negotiations and directed staff to secure a contract with Public Agency Retirement Services, also known as PARS. And it is our recommendation as staff that the Board of Education adopt resolution number 10-11-12 to implement the Early Retirement Incentive Program and approve the agreement for administrative services and direct the superintendent or designee to execute the necessary documents.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Roger.
I'd like to move approval of... Let me out here. Resolution number 10-11-12 as presented.
Second. We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Millar. Is there any further discussion from board members? Seeing none, Mrs. Holmes?
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Okay, let's move on to item number 6. Mr. Pinkerton, you're back up to bat. Approval of new position, licensed vocational nurse.
So I'm going to give the board a little bit of history about this position, why we're here today, and kind of where we're moving forward. And so one of the things that has, that occurs in terms of, I would say, with dealing with schools and students is that it's not just about education, but it's also about special education services, and in this case, medical needs of students. And so we have students in our district that need a certain anti-seizure medication called Diastat. And so the need centered around how can we have somebody available for those students should they need that medication at some point. We started with the idea of, and had to start with the idea of having a school nurse at the site. Now, we only have so many school nurses in the district. They can't all be at Baywood at the same time or one there all day every day. So we actually worked with the Personnel Commission in looking at our paraeducator position and possibly adding kind of an LVN slant as well. So somebody could be the LVN as well as the paraeducator. And so that would, because we had to have a paraeducator in the room, this would be something that we could look at. So we worked with the Personnel Commissioner or Commission, changed the job description, increased the pay for that position to where we thought it would possibly land, and we flew that position. We got we received no applicants for that position. And so we kind of did some soul searching with the commission and talking to outlying districts and trying to see. And to be honest with you, what we found is that people who go to get their LVN license don't do it to become a special ed paraeducator, I think. And so they're kind of two different job skills and two classifications. And so where the LVN position, when I talked to some people like in LuCMR, they had several applicants for the LVN position, but yet we were trying to find the LVN paraeducator and found nobody. And so, again, had to go kind of back to the drawing board a little bit. You know, our school nurses are getting taxed right now because somebody has to be at the school site. What, you know, while the student is there. And so our goal would be to look at a possible LVN at the site and to develop a position and to look at how this LVN could, you know, relieve some of the strain on the school nurses so that they can proceed to do their jobs and do all the other things that they're already taxed to do and provide that type of health service for the students that are at the school sites. As well as this could be a position, too, that, you know, right now it's diastat, you know, in terms of what the future is going to hold, in terms of medication needs, those types of things. It looked like a position that we definitely want to bring forward to the Personnel Commission to kind of bring into being. And for them, then, they will help to kind of create the job description for the LVN, as well as look at the pay range. And
do lots of trainings, but they have a lot of experience with health conditions and can help support students with, you know, giving medications or doing treatments or being able to respond to students' needs, you know, with diapering and toileting and all kinds of things.
Thank you. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Are there board members who would like to make comments or ask questions? Ms. Krismer.
Well, I'm sorry, Walter.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the LVN position is, I'm trying to understand it. Is it going to be site-specific because we're going to site students that with particular medical needs at a particular site, or do you envision them being this person being itinerant, moving from site to site?
I think that's something for us to kind of look at and develop. You know, in this case, we may have a site like Baywood where there is a school nurse a couple days a week, and so the LVN may be there the days the nurse isn't, vice versa at the other sites where we could develop a schedule like that. But definitely, when the student is at the school, we need to have somebody who's licensed to give the medication to the student. Now, I will tell you that there is a law in terms of this one case with diastat that it is possible to have a volunteer or have somebody at the site. It just came through, just passed, to where we could look at a paraeducator or somebody volunteering for that. But in terms of dealing with, that's something that we have to work with our union with in terms of the group. And, you know, it's a pretty evasive procedure to do something like that. And so there's just a lot that goes into a decision like that to just have a volunteer do it versus looking at, you know, the LVN. But definitely it's something where the person would be at the site all day.
Some of our, you know, Baywood, C.L. Smith have, and some of our classes up at Slo High, I mean, beyond diastat, they've got kids with G-tubes, they need medications administered in. And it's amazing what just walks in the door. I mean, you have to be prepared. This person helps, I think, give flexibility to the team's needs to adapt to what shows up, which is amazing, like mid-year, what arrives, you know, with their, you know, defibrillator in hand or their trach that we didn't know, you know, they were going to have, that kind of thing.
Walter and then Marilyn.
Thank you. So we actually don't know how many FTEs we would need in order to provide this. This is more just the outline of the job position.
Yes.
And is it practical for us to do this dual role, LVN, special ed, para educator?
Yes.
Because I was enamored of that concept. It's like the bus driver, you know. And I like that flexibility in thinking. It just sounds to me...
It is. We tried.
Yeah, it sounds to me that. Like it may not be a practical...
Yeah. And so I think for us, same thing. We thought... I was kind of enamored with it, too. We thought, hey, let's give this a try. Let's see if we can find somebody fit the dual role. But it just... From putting it out there, different sources, we flew, you know, from the paper to EdJoin to all the different avenues and didn't find anybody. So... Yeah,
it's going to be a complicated staffing... because your target students for the services
yes.
are a moving group.
Yes.
I support the idea of having the additional support for our nurses who we know are challenged. And I hope you can work it out. It seems like a fairly daunting task, but I have confidence in you and the personnel commission, and I hope we can work it out.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just had one question. Is it possible that a student that requires diastat because of a seizure disorder would be in a regular education classroom?
Oh, yeah. That could be possible.
Mm-hmm.
That could be possible. Yeah.
So are we talking about any time we have a student in one of our schools who requires or potentially could require that type of medication, we need to have either an LVN or an RN present the entire school day?
That's in a state of flux, but currently all of our students who have diastat are being covered, and they are all in special ed, I think, yeah.
Currently.
Currently have.
It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, and happen to be clustered at a couple of sites, so we're able to attend to the potential for that.
So we have Baywood as a hub, Smith as a hub,
mm-hmm.
Slow High.
On that, we've got about 20 kids diabetics, and half of them are at elementary age, and most of those are require oversight. And then, you know, after the spring viral season, someone will be newly diagnosed with diabetes, and we increase nursing visits because they're new and they can't do their insulin and, you know, those sort of stuff. So nursing flexes around the needs that crop up, and that's part of the challenge.
And currently, like at Baywood, we have several paraeducators, people doing different things. And so with this position like this, we would probably have this person take over some of those needs that other people are currently doing so that they could do them.
Got it. I'm not asking all these questions because I have any quarrel with going forward with this. I think it's
okay.
Really necessary, and I just hope we will get as many people as we need so that our students are covered. And I know that our nurses are overburdened.
Okay. I think Jackie would like to say a few things.
Yeah, hi, Jackie.
We'll wrap it up.
A couple other things is that when a student is unable to give themselves medication, such as the insulin, that's when a licensed RN or the school nurse has to provide the training until they're independent. When they become independent, then the nurses are not necessarily needing to be there all the time. They monitor, or the secretary or the paraeducator, the teachers monitor that. Secondly, these LVNs will be able to also generate some revenue because we'll be able to Medi-Cal bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I think that's it. Is there any more discussion or questions from the board members? I'll bring it back to...
Do we need a motion for...
We need a motion. It sounds like we need a motion on this. Is that correct?
Okay. I would move the recommendation regarding the position, new position for a licensed vocational nurse.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Any other discussion? Seeing none, bring it back for vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Let's move on to item number 7. Mr. Pinkerton, tonight is your night.
This is my night
Approval
tonight.
Approval of the 2012-13 yes. instructional calendar.
And so fortunately, one of my jobs and my position is I get to help with the instructional calendar discussion. And so tonight I'm bringing forward to you a draft of the 2012-13 instructional calendar. Basically, I've been involved in calendar discussions in my former district, and so, you know, all the same issues that we deal with here in San Luis Coastal, you'll be happy to know, they deal with every other district in our area and throughout the state and probably throughout the nation. So this year, basically...
Happy might be stretching it, actually.
Well, maybe. Chicago, they're adding days. We're doing stuff, right? There's lots going on. So basically what I did was I started with talking to SLCTA, with our teachers association, and they had already done a lot of work in this area and had kind of put together some draft calendars before we even got started, work that they had done last year, and they had done a great job in kind of laying things out. So we did have to include 3 new professional development days into the calendar, which was something that we had negotiated, and so that caused a few changes here and there in terms of the start of the school day and in where we were going to place those throughout the calendar. And so I tried to take kind of their recommendation, their survey results that we got from the teachers, and make sure that those were placed in the calendar correctly and things that they would agree upon. There's all the little intricacies that go into it. For instance, Morro Bay now finishes their semester by the beginning of winter break. So that means you cannot cut any days from the first semester. You have to have those days. You have to have the start of the school day earlier. So those are the little types of things. I heard in my discussions that last year kids had to drop out of school at Morro Bay a week early because San Luis Coastal kind of went along with when Cuesta started. And so little things like that that affect students in terms of looking at the calendar are important discussions. I got together a group of CSEA, SEIU employees, as well as the teachers, kind of looked at all the teacher survey results, and then also talked to the classified about what it meant for them and their ideas about the calendar discussion. And overwhelmingly with our classified groups, they definitely wanted to move to more of a one-week spring break. They much prefer to have that extra week during the summertime to either from the secretary standpoint, Janet Krebs, to be able to prepare for school starting, to close down and kindergarten enrollment, all those different things that go on during the summer. They wanted more time. From the custodial standpoint, from them talking to me, it was definitely that extra week during the summertime to clean classrooms and prepare for school was a huge thing. I know with the teachers, though, it's a kind of a volatile issue in terms of they're used to the 2-week spring break. Now we're looking at one. But even through their
own... On this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Millar.
I just have a quick question. So yes. we actually have one calendar here, even though there's
yes.
two pages.
It's one calendar. It's just kind of different formats.
Okay, great. All right.
Other questions or comments from board members? And we'll bring it back for a vote. Someone like to make a motion on this?
I'll move adoption of the 2012-13 instructional calendar as presented.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Buckman. Is there any further discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Let's move on to item number 8. Mr. Miller. This is award of bid number PA1101, Transitional Kindergarten Relocatable Project at Pacheco Elementary School.
Thank you, Mr. President. And what we're dealing with here is the Transitional Kindergarten Relocatable Project at Pacheco Elementary. It was advertised in accordance with the Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act. A public bid was required. Attendance at the mandatory pre-bid meeting and project walkthrough qualified the following vendors to submit the documents. I won't go through them all. They're in front of you. The successful bid was submitted by Holland Construction, $247,500. And to meet the project timelines and because of the board's hiatus over the winter break, the bid was awarded to Holland Construction in the amount of $247,500. After receipt and approval of all required submittals, a contract is executed. The project started December 12th, and estimated completion date is February 17th. Board action is requested to ratify the administrative approval of this contract.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board discussion or questions on this? Okay. I would entertain a motion. I'm sorry. Yes, Mrs. Roger.
Mr. Miller, as work progresses here, we began on the 12th, and let me see where we are. Completion date is a month from today, estimated completion date. We have about an 18% difference between the high bidder and the low successful bidder. Have we noticed that anything was, we've had a lot of change orders, anything?
There has been no change. One change order, Jeff? I think one change order came across. Yeah, okay. And it was our change order. The contractor has met his timelines, is proceeding successfully, and at this moment in time, we are very optimistic that we'll meet our timeline.
So it was a legitimate and successful low bid?
So far, so good.
Thank you very much. Let me, then, if no one else has a comment, I'll move approval.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any further discussion from board members? Seeing none, we'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Let's move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to pull an item. Item number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 10, approval of 2011-2013 agreement with California School Employees Association. 11, approval of 2011-2013 agreement with Service Employees International Union. Number 12, approval of 2011-2013 agreement with Confidential Employees. 13, approval of 2011-2013 agreement with Management Educators Council. 14, approval of contract renewal with Russell Miller, Assistant Superintendent of Business Services. Okay. Item number 14, I'm sorry, number 15, approval of contract renewal with Rick Robinette, Assistant Superintendent Ed Services.
Poll, please.
Okay, that one will be pulled. Item number 16, approval of contract renewal with Eric Prater, Superintendent.
Poll.
Okay, we have 14, 15, and 16 pulled. 17, additional new and modified secondary courses. Okay. Want to pull that one? Okay. Number 18, acceptance of donations. 19, disposition of surplus property. 20, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 21, approval of purchase orders. 22, approval of warrants and payroll. 23, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, Williams Settlement. Okay, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this? And seeing no one, I'd take a motion for items 9 through 13, 18, 21 through 23.
I'll move approval of items 9 through 13, 18, 21 through 23.
Okay. Is there any discussion from board members? Seeing none. Okay, I'm sorry. That'd be helpful, wouldn't it? Thank you, Jim. We have a motion and a second. Did you catch that, Mrs. Holmes? Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Let's go to item number 14, and that was pulled by Mr. Buckman and Mr. Quisenberry. Would one of you like to take that? Mr. Quisenberry, would you like to take that?
Yes, I think we need to amend the contract, and this would be item 14, the contract renewal with Russell Miller, Assistant Superintendent of Business. We are looking at, give me the right page here.
It was item 4D.
4D.
Page 3, item D.
4D, right.
Okay.
Item 4D. And I would like to amend that contract. It says having a death benefit amount. This is for the term life insurance policy. And
Walter,
So that passes 5-0. Item number 15, Jim, would you like to tackle that one?
Yes, again, I'd like to correct the contract for Rick Robinette, Assistant Superintendent. Again, this is on page 3. It's item 4D. And again, I want to change the amount equal to 2 years rather than the 3 as stated in this document.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Someone like to second that? Seconded by Mr. Buckman. Any other discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Carries 5-0. Number 16.
Mark, what did you do this one?
Okay. All right, again, we are looking at the superintendent's contract, and we want to go to section 4C. And again, we want to correct that from an amount equal to 3 years to 2 years of salary.
Okay. So any discussion from board members? We have a motion. Would someone like to make a second? Seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. I was laughing because can we have a third second?
The math.
We're confused.
banana.
Let's see. There was a request to pull item number 17, Mrs. Delkiskamp, or Dr. Delkiskamp. Sorry, I have to get used to that.
Rita's perfect. This item should have been an action discussion item, and as we usually do when we have a student or school needs arise, we like to bring those to you for your consideration. On page 17.2, there's one new course and two modified courses that we would like to propose. And this is the time of year when our schools are putting together their course offerings, so we want to be proactive and get these approved for them. We currently offer an AP Art History course at San Luis Obispo High School, and what we'd like to do here is add the seminar course that would take place during third trimester, and that would allow the teacher to better prepare the students for that AP exam. We do this in several AP courses, and here's another one we'd like to propose to be able to have that option. And then the two modified courses, we're just wanting to add some language in preparation for some online offerings we would like to have in our district. How about I let about Mr. Buckman tells us a little bit about this?
No, that's great. There's been a great deal of success with the health ROP class online. It's sparked interest by four other ROP teachers in the county, two of whom are from San Luis Obispo. So I'm very excited to see these here. It's interesting that the legislature and the governor signed into law this year that they are going to start promoting AP classes online. So small districts that don't have the ability to do AP will be able to take an AP class possibly offered by San Luis Coastal. So this seems to be the wave of the future, and I'm glad to see that ROP is at the front pushing it. So I'll make a motion to approve item 17, additional new and modified secondary classes for 2012-2013.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Quisenberry. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Let's move on to item number 19, disposition of, was it 18 you wanted pulled?
No.
19, that's what I thought. 19, disposition of surplus property. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. It looks like we're getting surplusing a van that has the wheelchair lift, and I wanted to make sure that we have been in touch with the adult ed programs that we're looking for use of our vehicles or acquisition of our vehicles.
They're aware of our surplusing and their ability to bid.
And can I ask a question about this? So do public agencies have an opportunity to bid on these things as well?
Yeah.
And is that within the normal bidding process, or is that outside of the normal bidding process?
It's a normal bidding process. Any entity can bid on this.
Okay. Thank
Mark,
you.
Correct?
It was my understanding that on surplus, and that may be just real estate property, that public nonprofits have the ability to bid first. Does that apply to?
We use our, what do you call them, Rick? The bus driver service workers. Yeah. The bus driver service workers, right now we don't have enough vehicles. We send them out two and three at a time, and sometimes it's only efficient for one man to go to the job. So we've got a very good price on these used Rangers. They're small vehicles. They're fuel efficient, and we don't anticipate a need for a heavy-duty vehicle to haul and use. So this is what the purpose of these are.
Okay. I'd like to compliment the administration and Jeff and everybody on picking up these trucks, and I'm also very very interested and happy to see that we're actually looking at used vehicles. So it's a good savings to the district. I'd like to move approval of item 20, approval of furniture and equipment requests.
And we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Roger. Tell me before I vote on this, what is Department SOW? Does that mean it's in the pig farm or what? What? Oh, operational. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. That's what I was wondering. We're going to load up the pigs in the back and haul them around to the FFA. Okay. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. This is what it would be like to have a five-person board, you guys. Let's move on to item. I'm not going there. Let's move on to item number 25, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to have anything on the advanced agenda? Okay, seeing no one, let's move on to item number 26, reports by board members. Do any board members have reports? Mr. Millar.
I would just like to acknowledge Civic Beach High School's mock trial team participated in a scrimmage with Arroyo Grande High School and Danuba High School from, I believe, Tulare County.
Yes.
They came a long way. It was a great all-day Saturday kind of event. We did three trials at Arroyo Grande High School, giving each team's prosecution defense a chance to have the practice. And then we came back to Pacific Beach so Danuba could have more practice with Pacific Beach because they had come a long way. The kids had pizza together. It was a great experience. And I would also just like to acknowledge the Martin Luther King holiday from yesterday. I think it's one of the most important holidays in our country. And I happened to catch on the news hour the fifth grade class from Walker Elementary and Washington, D.C. schools, I believe. And the students read excerpts of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, each child doing a part of it, and kids of all race, gender. And it was one of the most moving things I've ever seen. And I'm sure you can find it online. And just to hear the passion of these children when they would speak these lines, it so clearly indicated that they understood what they were saying and the import of those words. And it was wonderful. Have some hankies nearby. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yes.
Mark.
I'd also just like to thank Colleen Martin at San Luis High School for organizing a career day this coming Friday, and was very proud to be invited to be a participant, but mostly to thank Colleen for putting that together.
Great. And Mr. Quisenberry.
And just a quick comment on the winter concerts. They were marvelous. They were outstanding in every respect.
And I'd like to thank the staff at Del Mar today for indulging me and letting me come into the classrooms. I was able to get into a few classrooms and visit the teachers and see the great teaching that's going on, and really the the wonderful attitudes of our students. It was great to watch some good teaching. And the other thing I'd just like to mention for, I think, hopefully all of our board members read the opinion piece that was in the Tribune on Sunday, I believe it was, about things that school boards should pay attention to. And when I look back at our initiatives and I look back at the progress that we're making in All Means All, I think that we are paying attention to those things, and we are keeping all students in mind, and I'm really proud of what our school district is doing. And on that note, we will... I'm sorry, Mrs. Roger. I didn't... God, I am just like colorblind today. I apologize.
Well, who knows what I'm up to, because I can't control my microphone. It's possessed. But I thought I would take the opportunity to engage in some competitive boardsmanship here, because I'm not going to be the only guy without a report. I had the opportunity today to have some conversation with one elementary principal about, and help me out here, Mr. Robinette, is it LLI, which is, and this is also highly effective, and it is able to reach more students at a time. So they were very receptive to having me come out on short notice and just kind of sit in. And if anyone else has that interest, I think it's something that we will probably be looking at in the future as a reading intervention for the district. So there, nobody one-up me this week. And
you win.
We never one-up you.
I win. And so on that note, I'm signing off my microphone.
And on that note, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much.